Hey everybody, Josh Peck here. We certainly have a lot to get to today. Why are young people just in droves heading towards this spiritualism where they believe they can communicate with the dead and probably actually are? You know, the Bible doesn't tend to condemn things that are not possible. It doesn't tell you not to do something if it's impossible to do it. What is with that spike? Also, have you heard of this possible ancient Nephilim metropolis that's been discovered in America, here in America? We're going to have to talk about all this and more. Now, we can start with 2 Timothy 3:1. It's a very, very famous passage that talks about the last days, but understand this, that in the last days there will come times of difficulty, for people will be lovers of self, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, heartless, unappeasable, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not loving good, treacherous, reckless, swollen with conceit, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having the appearance of godliness but denying its power. Avoid such people. Now, if that is not a perfect description of the millennial generation, I don't know what is. And listen, I'm not trying to bash on an entire generation. I'm a millennial myself, and I don't take a lot of pride in that. Description, but that is what the millennial generation has become. All of these things. But I want to talk about the having the appearance of godliness but denying its power. You know, there's a lot of millennial. Really, there's a lot of people that they don't want to submit to God, but they still have this inner need for some type of spirituality, for some type of spiritual experience. And this plays heavily into Bible prophecy. We're seeing such a big rise in this. And I want to talk about this before we get to the Nephilim city, which is an important story too. But there are young people today. There was a big story on this on the BBC. There are young people today who believe that they're communicating with the dead. So why are some millennials turning to the supernatural yet denying what the true spiritual reality is, denying that the God of the Bible, the one who says not to communicate with the dead, that's necromancy. Why are they denying him yet they're still indulging in this spiritual activity, and it's becoming very prevalent in our culture. I mean, there's a big spike in this. Now, before we get to that, though, I have got to tell you, I love the USCCA. So, what is the USCCA? It's one of the most important decisions that you can make as an American. This is why you should become a member of the UCCA, and this is exactly what their membership is all about. So, the USCCA, it stands for the United States Concealed Carry Association. So right off the bat, you know that this is an organization that stands up for your rights as a responsibly armed American. They are hands down the best defense protection provider out there, and their firearms education and training resources, they're genuinely life-saving. So we're talking about hundreds of videos, guides, books, articles, you name it. And listen, it's true. You already have protection plans for your car, your health, your house, even for your phone. So why do you need self-defense protection? Well, listen, if you own or carry a gun, you know that you take on the responsibility of having to defend yourself or your family every time you leave your house. If you're forced to defend yourself, you need to understand that you will have to face our legal system and all that political baggage that comes with it. That means you'll face arrest, legal fees, even the possible loss of your Second Amendment rights, and you do not want to deplete your life savings just to prove your innocence. So this is where the USCCA steps in and provides upfront funds to cover bail, attorney fees, civil and criminal defense costs, and more. They'll also pay for you to replace your gun if the police take it as evidence, which they probably will, let's be honest. You can even choose your own attorney, and in fact, the USCCA has an extensive list of pro Second Amendment attorneys in every state who you can trust to defend your rights as an American gun owner. They also have a critical response team on call all day, every day, even holidays, so you'll never have to worry about getting an answering machine. They have three levels of membership, so you can pick what works best for you and your needs. Now, with the USCCA, you can be confident that you'll be taken care of if, God forbid, you ever have to defend yourself with your gun. They also have the training and education you'll need to be prepared, which is one of the best parts about becoming a member. They're dedicated to training and educating gun owners. You might like to think that you're pretty knowledgeable, but it seems like every day they've got something new and useful to teach. You can feel better prepared carrying your gun knowing the USCCA is on your side every single day. And you don't have to just take my word for it. You can see for yourself. Go ahead and click the link in the description below, or you can find the banner at joshpeckdisclosure.com, or just text PECK, PECK, to 87222, which spells USCCA. It's easy to remember. Text PECK to 87222 and see what they have to offer. You won't be disappointed. This is one of the most important decisions that you can make as a gun owner and just as an American for yourself and your family. You got to be prepared. All right, so let's continue with this. So on the BBC, they did this whole report. So Ashley Robinson, 36 years old, she closes her eyes, or closes his eyes, excuse me, and goes into a meditative state. And he says, listen to these words that he's quoted as saying here for this. Father God, help us get a better understanding of the universe. May you bring forward our friends this evening in love, light, and harmony. End quote. He draws a breath and then says, quote, giving evidence of life after death and the truths of spiritualism. Amen. End quote. So they're actually praying to God and asking God to essentially go against his own teaching. Now, of course, while they may say, Father God, this is not truly the God of the Bible that they're praying to, it's something else. So after this, you know, there's silence. Everybody's eyes are closed. The writer of this article says that, you know, he kind of looks around and Ashley turns to him and says, does the name Dave mean anything to you? And the person writing the article says, no, I don't think so. So then Ashley says, it's important that you answer only yes or no. And so then the room apparently is filled with large velvet, you know, armchairs that envelop you when you sit on them, and it's like being in somebody's living room. The article writer is surrounded by floral lampshades, crystals, and crucifixes, books about seances, reincarnation, and psychic life of dead pets are apparently all over the place. This Ashley person is apparently a medium, which means that he claims to communicate with the dead, or as he calls it, the spirit world. You know, he says he acts as a conduit to help people hear from the loved ones that they have lost. This is straight up necromancy, and it is forbidden in the Bible. Now, apparently, unlike psychics who claim to make predictions, mediums only claim to pass on messages. So Ashley says, quote, I'm like a radio tuning into different frequencies, and I don't always remember what I've heard when it's over. End quote. So, you know, this Ashley person goes on with the article writer asking, you know, about certain dates. I mean, it's exactly the kind of thing that you read on or that you see on any of these popular medium shows, or that you know, or these psychic shows and things like that. So, you know, as Ashley calls this, hearing spirits, communicating with the spirit world is something that he claims to have been doing since he was a child. So he says, quote, at first it was like hearing a foreign language. I started training when I was 18, but I didn't start working until I was 25, end quote. So he claims that he's always heard from spirits, but that he became closer with them after suffering a major stroke in his early 20s, and that stroke killed a third of the brain cells in his left side of his brain, so he thinks his closeness with the spirit world assisted his recovery. And today he works full time as a civil servant and does his mediumship in the evenings and on weekends. So today, the Spiritualist National Union of Great Britain estimates that they have around 11,500 members throughout the UK attending their 340 churches to try to communicate with the spirit world via mediums. A number which they claim has been bolstered by a surge in interest from younger generations. The number of people in England and Wales who identified with their religion as spiritualist rose by 22% between 2001 and a 2011 consensus. So just in 10 years, And who knows how much since then? You know, since 2011, it's almost been 10 years since then. So who knows how much it's risen then, since then? And you know, again, this isn't even touching the American problem of this. I mean, it's insane to think about the upsurgence in this stuff and how it's being practiced in our churches, and it's going to continue to do so. You might have heard about these seances. Apparently, it's exactly what you would imagine, except in this case, there's no candles. They have battery-powered LED flames that flicker around them in this seance that the article writer is talking about. So Ashley says, quote, "It's a health and safety thing. Burning candles would have pushed our insurance up too much," end quote. So, you know, of course, they're worried about the health and safety when it comes to candles, but not the spiritual health and safety of who they don't ask who they're actually talking to here. They don't entertain the possibility that this could all be demonic. Now, spiritualism, as practiced by Ashley and the Wimbledon Church, it's a religion dating back to about 1948. It began when two American sisters, Maggie and Kate Fox, who were aged 11 and 15 respectively, said that they could communicate with the ghost of a murdered man in his home before the family moved in. And news of their supposed gift spread far and wide, and they quickly became famous. Now, despite being dogged by claims of fraud, the sisters' public appearance attracted packed crowds eager to witness their supernatural powers in action. And meanwhile, supernaturalism's popularity grew around the world, and we certainly get a lot of that here in America. Now, by the late 1800s, it arrived in the UK, drawing devotees from across the social spectrum. So Queen Victoria herself was said to have participated in seances, while Sherlock Holmes creator Arthur Conan Doyle and the celebrated biologist Alfred Russel Wallace were among the movement's most high-profile followers. You know, not even the confession in 1888 by Maggie Fox that she and her sister had faked it all along did much to dampen this appeal. Interestingly, spiritualism back then was also specifically popular with women who were deemed more spiritual than men, and so got to adopt leading roles denied to them, in other religions. Now, today, spiritualism is defined as a religious movement with rituals and beliefs practiced by those who follow it. Its central belief is in life after death, the existence of a soul which lives on after our physical bodies die. And that might not sound so different to more mainstream religions like Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, but it diverts from them with the controversial claim that mediums can contact the dead. And also, you know, since its inception, people have publicly exposed the techniques used by mediums who claim to be passing on messages from the dead. So famous debunkers include the magician Harry Houdini, who campaigned to expose fraudulent leeches, as he called them, in the 1920s, through the modern illusionist Derren Brown and former magician and escapologist James Randi, whose life story was the subject of an award-winning documentary in 2014. Now, Professor Chris French, who leads the research unit into paranormal beliefs at Goldsmiths University, he said, quote, "I would make a big distinction between those who are deliberate con artists, which I suspect is a minority, and those who genuinely believe they have a gift. Whenever this kind of thing is put to the test under properly controlled conditions, even those mediums who genuinely think they have a gift don't seem able to do what they claim, although I genuinely think they're sincere. So the question is, what's going on when people go for a reading?" End quote. So Professor French goes on to explain that the concept of cold reading, it's you know, a technique that can be used to convince complete strangers that you know all about them. Anyone who is interested can buy books and train themselves in this type of thing. So he says, quote, "A component of it is the Barnum effect, which refers to statements you can make about a person that sound like you have insight into their innermost personality, but in reality, these statements are pretty generic. An example is, I'm sensing that you've achieved quite a lot in your life, but there's so much more you could achieve if you could just tap into that potential." And then we all think, yeah, that's me, end quote. Now, so going along with this, you know, the best case scenario for a person who's claiming to be a medium is that they are, you know, essentially an ignorant liar. You know, they They don't realize that they're lying. They think they have a gift, but really there's just some intuitiveness or something involved, or what they're saying is so vague that it could apply to pretty much anybody. And then when you dig down enough, you're going to be able to find one person where it applies to. But on the more dangerous side, people who actually do communicate with spirits, this is straight up demonic. They're communicating with demons. Now, there is a passage in the Bible that talks about the Witch of Endor conjuring up a legitimate human spirit. Now, I know some people say that, well, that's a familiar spirit. It wasn't really the person. I believe that was an actual ghost. People can look into the work of Dr. Michael Heiser for that. I've interviewed him on it several times. I do believe that was a legitimate case of a ghost, but that did not bode well. And God has forbidden that. God has forbidden that we take part in what's called necromancy and communicating with the dead. So we see a rise of this in millennials today, a rise in paganism, a rise in new age type of things. But it's not even so much new age anymore. I mean, it still is new age, but it's more focused on paganism and pagan practices. And that is definitely, we're seeing a rise in those interests, because again, these people, they have a craving for something supernatural, for something spiritual, but they're not they're not satisfying that craving in the way that we were built to satisfy it by submitting to Jesus Christ and following him. Instead, they're entertaining demons. They're going after fallen angels and demons and other gods and all of that stuff. So we're going to see more of a rise in that, and then that is the type of thing that's going to lead to. Why do you think the Antichrist, when described in the Bible, the man of perdition and lawlessness and all this, why do you think he's so loved and beloved by the world? Because this is like an anything goes type of individual. This is as long as you're not Christian or Jewish, really, as long as you're not Christian, then everything's fine. Think about how much the Pope allows people to get away with. I mean, the current Pope Francis, he's obviously on the, what we would consider in America, the political left. He's all about like inclusion of all these things that the Bible speaks out against. So imagine a figure, like that, but they also have political power. Imagine how beloved by the world somebody like that would be. So that's how he's able to, get his foothold in the culture, really in the global culture, because this is going to be a global figure. And we could literally see that type of figure rise any day now, because the stage is set perfectly for an Antichrist with those features. Our culture is definitely set up for it. That's why you're seeing a spike in paganism. You're seeing a spike in especially millennials going after this stuff, in demon worship, and all of that kind of stuff. So we got to keep that in mind. Now, I would love to tell you about CBD Pure and CBD Pets. So a lot of you out there, a lot of you out there use CBD oil, and great, it's a great product, but where do you find it where you know it's good? If you're like me, you've probably ordered from somebody you didn't know before, or that you weren't familiar with, or maybe you did do your research and it seemed like a pretty good company, so you go and order, but then you get it and it's just not good. And most of those companies, they don't offer money back guarantees, so now you're stuck with this stuff that isn't doing anything for you. Well, CBD Pure and CBD Pets is totally different. They do have a money back guarantee, so if you don't love it, you can send it back, get your money back. There is no risk. But this is the absolute most pure CBD oil on the market. They medically test every batch through a third-party testing facility, and they post results of that on their website, so you can see for yourself. It's non-GMO, there's no pesticides, completely organic, everything that you want in a CBD oil. And they also make a version of it for your pets. So if your pet is suffering from some type of anxiety issue or something like that, you can get it for your pets as well. Go to joshpeckdisclosure.com and click on the banner, or just click on the description, the link in the description below. Check it out for yourself. You won't be disappointed. Okay, so I need to tell you about this Nephilim City thing that was discovered in ancient Nephilim City here in America, which in a actually in my state of Missouri, which is interesting. But for you to get that story, you have to go to joshpeckdisclosure.com and become a member. A membership is only $10 a month or $100 a year. And the reason that we're doing this is it ensures that we get to have access to our own content. You know, we don't have to rely on YouTube and just hope that they don't delete videos when they delete videos all the time. They've been putting a lot of pressure on this channel, making it impossible to get the information out to you. Now, controlling our own content is an expensive endeavor. So I'm able to, you know, offer full videos, and the lowest price point possible is $10 a month or $100 a year. That's actually a little bit cheaper because you get a couple months for free. So just head on over to joshpeckdisclosure.com, become a member there. You'll see the members link right in the menu bar on the top. Become a member today. You will have access to the full Peck reports. You'll have access to archives of the Peck Underground Church interviews in case you miss them live, if you're not able to join live. If you're able to join live, they're free. But in case you can't join them live, then you can have access to the full interview there. This is the only way to ensure that our stuff doesn't get deleted and that we are free to just talk about whatever God lays on our hearts. You know, we need to be able to do that. This is how to do it. So become a member today at Josh Peck Disclosure. If you are a member, then let's talk about Nephilim. If not, if you're viewing this on YouTube, you can also go in the link in the description below. If you're viewing this on YouTube, you can just click on that link, become a member today, and then get the rest of the video. But for people just on YouTube, love you all, and we will talk to you next time. Take care and God bless. All right, for you members, so the Cahokia, it's North America's massive ancient city. So this is really interesting. It's near modern-day St. Louis, Missouri, and you can find towering mounds of earth that were once the product of a vast North American culture. And some have made links between this culture and the Nephilim, you know, like Cloud Eaters, if you've read that book by Tom Horne and Steve Quayle. Now, Cahokia was the largest city built by this Native American civilization, and because the ancient people who built Cahokia did not have a writing system, little is known about their culture. There are other ties here to Nephilim. You know, we hear about this all the time, these ancient cultures that apparently had no writing system, yet they were able to create these amazing structures and complexes and things. How were they able to do that? And that's where we get this Nephilim link, the giants of Genesis 6. Now, archaeological evidence hints at this fascinating society. So Mesopotamia had Ur, a wealthy city from 21 BCE, and a towering ziggurat. Egypt had Memphis and Alexandria with their great pyramids and library, respectively. And the Toltecs or Totonacs, who resided in modern-day Mexico, had Teotihuacan, which hosted over 125,000 people in its monolithic architecture. Ancient cities seem to have sprung up all over the world, each of which must have been magnificent, excuse me, sites in their day. But it seems like a handful of these cities kind of hog all the limelight. You know, though Teotihuacan may be known, for instance, few are familiar with North America's other great ancient city, Cahokia. Now, about 10 miles east of St. Louis, Missouri, 80 mounds of earth dot 2,200 acres of land, the largest of which covers 13.8 acres and rises 100 feet high. So these 80 mounds are the remainders of 120 mounds built 1,000 years before Columbus reached North America by a forgotten people called the Mississippians, named after, you know, the great river they lived near. All told, the mounds would have required the excavation of about 55 million cubic feet of earth. Imagine that. That is just crazy. So the Mississippian civilization is poorly understood. They had no writing system, and by the time Europeans bothered to seriously document their culture, they had been scattered and wiped out by European diseases they had no immunities to. So instead, much of our understanding of the Mississippians had come from archaeology, and the city of Cahokia represents the greatest trove of archaeological evidence. So the city was named after the Cahokia tribe that lived in the area when the French first arrived, though they were not its original inhabitants. In fact, by that time in the 17th century, Cahokia was abandoned. Now, though the Mississippians had no writing system, Cahokia was clearly the product of some kind of centralized planning. Its many great mounds are a testament to that, as well as the 50-acre leveled plain of the city named the Grand Plaza, the remains of a copper workshop, a palisade that surrounded its central ceremonial district, and large henges made of wood. So when Cahokia was at its greatest between 1050 and 1200 CE, it hosted an estimated 40,000 Mississippians, more than the city of London at the time. So this is huge. The bulk of these people flocked to the city between 1050 and 1100, where they built homes, they established the Grand Plaza, they built more mounds that raised important buildings over the thousands of other homes in Cahokia. And there seems to be a direct connection between mounds and Nephilim. I did an interview with L.A. Marzulli about the mysterious mound builders, and he talked about for example, the Serpent Mound. So you can go back on this channel and view that interview. But there seems to be a connection. You know, why were they building these things? And it seems like that they were worshiping false gods, their fathers. You know, the fallen angels that brought them into existence. Now, what was life like in Cahokia? We can actually, I want to show you this statue that was discovered. It's kind of strange here. Let me. Let's turn it on screen share. Yeah, this comes from Big Think, by the way. But so here's this statue, a statuette recovered from Cahokia depicting a chunky player. The figure holds a, I don't know if that's chunky or chunky, stone in its hand, and it comes from Wikimedia Commons. Now, isn't that strange that a lot of these statues have this like weird elongated part of the head here? I don't know if that's supposed to be a hat or if this is like just a band or not, but very strange indeed. You know, we see that a lot. We see that type of thing a lot in ancient statues and things. But you know, we can glean some of the features of Cahokian life from the fragments that they left behind. So they found carved discs throughout Cahokia that were used in a game called I don't know. I think it's Chunky. Let's just say Chunky, that was played on a large flat field of the Grand Plaza. So participants rolled the Chunky stone across the field and threw spears to toward where they thought the stone would come to rest. So huge audiences watched Chunky players, and players often gambled on the outcome. But life in Cahokia wasn't entirely fun and games. There was also evidence that Cahokians engaged in human sacrifice. Of course, of course. Human sacrifice was always a big Nephilim and really demonic endeavor. Now, at one mound in particular, which is called Mound 72, researchers found the remains of 272 people. In one instance of sacrifice, 39 people were lined up in front of a pit and clubbed one by one, falling into a mass grave. Two dozen different mass graves populate Mound 72, all of which contain the remains of people who had been strangled, clubbed, and even buried alive. But there's also a more reverent grave at Mound 72, a man buried on 20,000 beads made from seashells, which were statue symbols and luxury items in the Mississippian culture. So these beads were arranged in the shape of a falcon, and the falcon was an important symbol in Mississippian culture, typically associated with great warriors and Chunky players. By the time that Columbus and other Europeans arrived in America, Cahokia was abandoned and had been since approximately the year 1300. Now, what really drove the Mississippians away from the vast city is unclear. It's possible there had been some kind of conflict with another people. The palisade that encircled part of the city speaks to that. And you know, this is something that was brought up in the Cloud Eaters, because there seems to be a lot of Native American populations that just disappeared. And there's a theory that maybe it was other Nephilim tribes that drove them out, or you know, even cannibalized them. Now there's other theories that it says that with Cahokia, that it could be that the unique density of Cahokia led to its downfall. So few other places in North America had tens of thousands of humans living in close proximity with one another. It could be that disease wiped out the Cahokians, or that the area was overhunted, overfished, overfarmed. Some evidence suggests that the area was severely flooded twice, once between 1100 and 1260, and again between 1340 and 1460. It could be a combination of these factors that led to these mound builders to abandon Cahokia. So today, Cahokia is preserved as a historic site that anyone can visit, but Cahokia only gained its protective status in the 1960s. Prior to that, it was the site of heavy development. Some of its mounds had been leveled for farming, airfields, housing, and highways. But fortunately, much of the site still remains, and it represents one of the few ancient cities left to visit in North America. So it's really interesting. We're going to have to keep our eye on that to see if they discover any large skeletons or anything. Definitely interesting stuff. If you could, go ahead and leave a comment and take part in the member dashboard. If you're viewing this, you are a member and glad to have you. So make sure you do that. It has been great talking to you, and I'm always curious to know your opinions and hear what you have to say. And thank you so much for being a member. It greatly helps the cause of everything that we're trying to do here. So thank you so much for your support. Love you all, and until next time, take care and God bless.